Does the social class or occupational background of a member of Congress affect his or her voting record? Our guest this hour says yes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 20th. We'll talk with a political scientist from Duke University who has studied the connection between the occupational backgrounds of members of Congress and their voting behavior. He says if a lawmaker, for example, is a former finance officer or a former farmer, that makes a big difference in how he or she votes on matters. And we will talk about how, as the income inequality gap grows in America, the gap between lawmakers and their constituents is widening as well. And we'll welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Nick Carnes, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. Good morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Joy.
Well, thanks for joining us. Tell us how you went about studying this matter on social status of our elected officials and their voting records.
Well, basically what I've done is collected publicly available nonpartisan information about the professional or occupational backgrounds of everyone in Congress, and then just compared members of Congress who worked in different kinds of jobs, different lines of work before they were elected, and looked at information about things like how they vote or the kinds of bills they introduce, or looked at the aggregate level, like the occupational makeup of a state legislature, and compared that to the kinds of policies the legislature enacts. And across the board, I get the same answer, regardless of exactly where you look in the U.S. political process. Social class makeup of politicians seems to have a big effect on the kinds of economic policies they enact. Politicians from the working class are more progressive on economic issues, more pro-worker and less pro-business. Politicians who were white-collar professionals, especially the ones who worked in the private sector, tend to be more conservative on economic issues, more pro-business and less pro-worker.
Yeah. Isn't everybody in Congress a lawyer?
Not quite everybody, Joy. Yeah, that is actually one of the challenges in doing this kind of research. It's very rare to see a politician who is genuinely from the working class, who actually worked with their hands, who had a manual labor or service industry job before getting elected and worked in it a long time. But they're there. You have to go back in time in some cases, and you have to look at lots and lots of data. But when you see them, the results are crystal clear. You know, they have a different perspective than the lawyers in Congress, who have a different perspective than the business owners and the CEOs.
But the people who are from working class backgrounds make up only a very small minority of people in Congress?
That's right. So, you know, by my count, if working class people were a political party, say, they would be a little over half of the electorate, and they would be about 2% of Congress. And that's been true in every Congress at least since 1901.
Yeah. Why should we be concerned about this?
Well, first of all, you know, patterns like this bother people just on symbolic grounds alone. There are people out there who think Congress should look like the people it represents. It should it shouldn't be made up of a totally different mix of people than the country as a whole. Over and above sort of the symbolic concerns you might have, this sort of unequal makeup of Congress has major effects on economic policy. It shifts, tilts the scales in favor of economic policies that white-collar professionals want at the expense of economic policies that the most disadvantaged Americans need.
Mm-hmm. Aren't there white-collar professionals who maybe came from more humble roots?
There are, absolutely. And of course, there are exceptions to these patterns, too. These are sort of averages or trends. But we can all think of, you know, examples of politicians who run counter to this trend. You know, FDR, Ted Kennedy. And yeah, there are politicians who were very privileged themselves as adults, but, you know, mom and dad had it rough, and they remember that, and they carry that with them. But on average, if you just look at the typical member of Congress, what mom and dad did is actually not a great predictor of what the member of Congress is going to do as an adult. There are some people who remember where they grew up, and there are some people who are perfectly comfortable saying, forget mom and dad, you know, I have a different perspective. The classic example of that would be John Boehner. His parents were Democrats, and he said, you know what, I don't want to do that. I want to go, you know, I'm going to go make it in business. I'm going to be a Republican. And there are just as many John Boehners as there are, you know, the politician who you know, remembers how tough mom and dad had it. What really matters is what they did as adults. That's where you can see who they are and in the path they chose for themselves.
So why do you suppose there are so many wealthy people in Congress?
That's a great question. The truth is, we're not quite sure. There isn't much research on this question. The work that I've done says it's probably not voters themselves. So when a candidate from the working class runs, that candidate does about as well as any other candidate. Voters don't seem to have a problem with candidates from the working class. But something is screening candidates from the working class out long before Election Day. So by the time voters get to the polls, they've got, you know, a choice between a lawyer and another lawyer, or a lawyer and a business owner.
Is it just a matter that the lawyer and the business owner have money, and the working class candidate or potential candidate does not?
That's got to be part of it. I think it's incredibly expensive to run a campaign. Even state and local elections are expensive. There are other possibilities too. It could be that you know, it's easier for a lawyer or a business owner to take off work for 6 months and run a campaign. There are so many factors, I think, working against Americans from blue collar backgrounds, from the working class, in the campaign process. The hard part is pinning down which ones are most important.
So what should happen to encourage more working class people to run for office?
Well, you know, there are a couple of places where organizations have been trying out different models of encouraging greater working class representation. Models basically designed to help working class people get elected. The classic example would be in New Jersey, where the AFL-CIO has set up a candidate school. They basically take union-affiliated or non-union-affiliated working-class citizens in New Jersey, and they identify sort of the people who have an interest in running for office. They take them to Rutgers University, and they give them courses on how to run a good campaign, how to be effective in government, and then they give them sort of the kinds of grassroots support that the AFL-CIO gives candidates. And the end result has been spectacularly successful. They have a 75% win rate for people who go through their candidate school. They've been able to make it into virtually every level of the New Jersey government, on up to the state legislature. So it actually turns out that the candidate school spends each year about 1% of what John Corzine spent running for the U.S. Senate in New Jersey for the first time. So for very little cost, you can actually make a lot of progress on this issue. The real challenge has been getting people to pay attention to this this challenge to political equality when there are so many other challenges out there right now.
We are talking with Nick Carnes, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University, talking about the social status of our elected officials in Congress and how that affects their voting record. And we're wondering if this makes a big difference to you. Do you feel like your member of Congress fairly represents you? in Congress or in state or local politics for that matter. Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be partly cloudy and cool today. Scattered showers expected in northern Wisconsin. Highs today in the low 50s in the north to the low 60s in the south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 20th. As we just heard Kathleen Dunn after 9 o'clock, we'll be talking with the author of Patchwork Nation about voting patterns. She's going to find out who do the so-called 47% vote for, the 47% who apparently don't pay federal income taxes. And she'll be talking about that after 9 o'clock. We are talking about social class and politics and why so many lawmakers are wealthier than the rest of us and how their occupational backgrounds and their social class affects their voting record. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest who has researched this issue. And we're welcoming your own thoughts on this. Does this bother you? Does this matter to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Nick Carnes, who is an assistant professor of public policy at Duke University. And I wanted to ask you, Professor Carnes, who are the 47% who aren't paying federal income taxes? Who are they voting for? Are they voting for the lawmakers who have this higher social status?
They are, Joy, but I'm reluctant to say that that's necessarily an expression of the fact that they want to be governed by white-collar professionals. As I said a minute ago, by the time the voter gets to the polls, there's really no choice. The candidates on the ballot are a white-collar professional or a white-collar professional, a millionaire or someone who has a net worth just a little under $1 million. So I'm really reluctant to say, you know, the fact that we have a white-collar government, that almost no one from the working class holds office in most of our political institutions, I'm reluctant to say that that's a reflection of the popular will of what, you know, the 47% want or any other group of voters you want to define. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the voters don't really get a say in the social class makeup of government.
Well, maybe you just answered this, but Jamie on Facebook wrote, obviously, this doesn't matter to those who voted them in. Do you think there is any sort of resentment or even acknowledgement from voters that their elected representatives, for the most part, are in a more affluent social class?
You know, when I talk to people about this, there are some people who are perfectly comfortable with it, who say, yeah, absolutely, white collar professionals should be calling the shots. They're better at governing somehow. But there are just as many people who say, I am uncomfortable with the fact that almost no one from the working class has a seat at the table in decisions that profoundly affect the well-being of everyone. The evidence that I've looked at is pretty clear on the fact that there are more than enough politically savvy working class Americans to fill every seat in Congress, every seat on every state legislature. So this isn't a practical necessity in our political process. There are 700,000 Americans for every one member of the House of Representatives. There are plenty of politically savvy working class people out there who could be playing a role in government. The question is, what's keeping them out? And that's, there's absolutely no evidence that it's the voters themselves. When a working class candidate runs, the working class candidate does well.
Let's take some calls. We have Steve in Rhinelander with us first. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
Yes, what do you think?
Spectacular show. something that needs to be addressed in our society as a whole, I feel. I just got involved in local politics. I am 30, almost 31 years old, and you know, kind of phased into the white-collar world from the blue-collar world through a bunch of random, very lucky choices. The thing that I've discovered is not only on the city, the county levels, it makes it, the meetings are always during the day.
Right.
And this makes it virtually impossible for anyone who's holding a 9-to-5 job to take any part in the government. Now, luckily, the city of Rhinelander is very good about working around schedules and whatnot, but it's something that I didn't really realize until I was involved, how difficult it would be if you were working a 9-to-5 job to have any say
That's,
in local government.
I guess I didn't think of that, Professor Carnes. So, yeah, if you are a working man or woman, it's hard to get away for all day long public hearings or meetings or such.
Yeah, Steve, I think you're exactly right. I think that's a big part of the explanation. If you're, you know, say a lawyer, you just ask the partners, can I go, you know, can I leave for a few hours to go to a political meeting? They're going to be thrilled. They're going to say, absolutely, take the afternoon off. But if you've got a nine, if you're punching a time card, that's a much, much harder situation to negotiate. And for a lot of working class Americans, that meeting is going to be impossible to make. Steve, I think you're exactly right here.
Well, that's how we turned into, at least used to be considered, that we had part-time legislatures or, you know, part-time congresses. Now they've turned into full-time jobs, haven't they?
For the most part, you do see more working class people holding office in places where the legislature is more like a city council and less like Congress. So to the extent that the meetings are happening less often, yeah, it's easier for working class people to hold office then. What Steve's describing definitely squares with sort of the national data that I've looked at.
Steve, thanks so much for calling. Teresa in Janesville is with us now. Good morning.
Hi. I spent a lot of time in debate in high school, and I was around a lot of people who had a great desire to go into politics. Okay, they knew that's what they wanted. Not everyone wanted to run for office, but those who did, almost to the person, said they were going to start by being lawyers.
Uh-huh.
Because being a lawyer teaches you how to speak in a way that is politically correct. And also, it gives you a status so that you don't have to up the way you live, or you don't have to appear different than the way you actually live in order to run. And so
yeah.
I think some of the problem is that the people with the mindset to go into politics start in some of these professions that very deliberately put them in the public eye.
Yeah, Teresa, I get what you're saying. And Professor Carnes, that certainly plays into this, I bet.
Teresa, I think you're absolutely right. Part of the explanation is it's very difficult for working class people when you do things like put the meetings during the day. Part of the explanation, too, is that these patterns can become self-reinforcing over time. So if Congress is made up of 60% lawyers and I'm someone who wants to run for office someday, I'm going to look at that and say, gosh, I should get a law degree if I want to be a member of Congress someday. So at some point, yeah, these patterns can become self-reinforcing, but there's nothing about being a lawyer, or there's nothing about being a lawyer that's mandatory for holding office. A person can be a good public speaker if they come from any line of work. A person can, understand how to craft good public policy, regardless of where they come from. But Teresa, I absolutely share your sense that there are people who want to run for office who choose to go to law school for that reason.
Yeah, and in some cases, believing that maybe that is a good resume builder for running for office, if that's what they want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're seeing a shift, especially recently. We had in Wisconsin a newcomer to politics who was a millionaire businessman, Ron Johnson, run in 2010 and defeat our incumbent Russ Feingold, lawyer, in that election. And he's now alone. I mean, there are a lot more very rich business people who have never been in politics before that are deciding to jump in. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right. And this is, you know, relatively new. Go back 100 years and there wasn't, you know, campaigns weren't as expensive. A person didn't have to have, amassed a huge personal fortune or have a lot of friends who had, you know, huge personal fortunes to run for office. So that's almost certainly made it harder for working class people. But even back then, it was very difficult for a working class person to make it to Congress. So even before the rise of sort of mega spending and millionaires who were buying their way in, even before unions declined, Congress was made up of the same mix of people that it's made up of today. So money has, I think, added another layer of challenges for working class Americans.
We'll talk more about the mix of people in Congress and why there is a lot more wealthier people in Congress, a lot more people who have a business or finance backgrounds or legal backgrounds, and so few people in Congress that have working class backgrounds, and how we might change that. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Nick Carnes, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Most members of Congress are much richer than you and me, and most are in white-collar professions. Should we be concerned about this? Does the social status or the occupational background of an elected official affect their voting record? Our guest says yes, and we are talking about how and why this matters and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, September 20th. Our guest is Nick Carnes, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. And let's take another call. We have Bill in Milwaukee next. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Professor Carnes. Anecdotally, I might mention that Claude Pepper of Florida, who was born on a farm, became a lawyer and rose to be the senior senator, commented during the Reagan administration that the problem with American government was that it was run by bankers and businessmen instead of statesmen and patriots. But my question is, has your research revealed any trends that are due to race or gender?
Absolutely, Bill. There are sort of parallel differences in how, for instance, men and women in Congress vote or how legislators who are white and black vote. And those things matter, too. If you separate legislators out that way, you do see big gaps by gender, by race. But even when you break legislators down that way or by party or by just about anything else you might care about, within, say, a racial category or a party category or gender category, you still see the same differences between legislators from different classes. But your sense is exactly you're exactly spot on that yes, there are other personal characteristics that are important to, you know, what a legislator does when they get to office. The bottom line is, you know, politicians are people, too. And like the rest of us, their backgrounds, their experiences shape how they see the world. So, race and gender matter my message is that, that class matters too.
Yeah, didn't you find out that the occupational background had a bigger impact on a voting record than just about anything else?
On economic issues, the kind of job that a legislator had before they got into office is a better predictor of what they're going to do as a politician than things like their race or their gender. The single best predictor of what a politician does is still their party. That's the major dividing line within, you know, say Congress. But even within parties, you see big differences. A Republican who worked in blue-collar jobs before getting into office does look different on economic issues, is more pro-worker and less pro-business than a Republican who was a CEO or who worked in finance or something along those lines.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill. Harry in Madison is with us now. Hi, Harry.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
What do you think the fact that the unions are moribund and the fact that the press gives little opportunity for working class people to be heard? I've seldom heard a working class advocate on WPR, which is probably the best public medium around.
You missed those
Okay, I'm sorry. There's a lot of talk about middle class, and we act as though there's no working class. Is there a prejudice, a class prejudice, against people who work in the society?
Your point about unions is spot on. You know, everyone who researches the labor movement in the U.S. will tell you that unions have been in decline for decades, and that can't help working class representation. And if you look, say, across states, for instance, the states that have stronger unions tend to be the states where there are more working class people in public office. As for the media, you know, I think when you hear middle, the way people talk about class, they often say middle class to mean everyone who's not sort of fabulously wealthy. So, you know, a lot of times when people say middle class, they're lumping in middle class and working class people together. My sense is that, there are certainly working class organizations that do a great job of getting their message out there, of getting into the press, of getting in front of Congress and committee hearings. I'm thinking here, you know, like the AFL-CIO. It has, you know, Harry, I'm not sure I share your sense that there's a serious press bias against the working class.
But Harry, thank you so much for the call, for bringing up that point. Can you, Professor Kearns, talk a little bit about the social class or occupational backgrounds of President Obama and Mitt Romney and how their experiences are affecting their campaigns?
Well, Obama and Romney are sort of a nice example of what I find when I look at, you know, hundreds and thousands of politicians. President Obama was a lawyer and a professor for most of his professional career, and you know, his policies are to the left of Romney's, and Romney was a CEO, and Romney says, you know, I was a businessman, I think like a businessman, and that, you know, is why I favor conservative economic policies. What's important is that when voters get to the polls this November, their choice is still between two white-collar professionals, a lawyer and a businessman. And I hope I live long enough to see a presidential election where voters have the chance to weigh in on a major candidate from the working class.
Mm-hmm. Well, Vice President Joe Biden comes from working class roots, but moved into the white collar profession, right?
That's right. So you know, like Obama, Biden was a lawyer, my sense is that Biden is one of the politicians who really remembers his working class roots. But like I said a little earlier, there are just as many politicians who you know, say, forget mom and dad. That's their political world. That's not my political world. My sense is that, Biden is certainly no enemy of the working class. There are exceptions to these patterns, obviously, but again, you know, when voters get to the polls, they won't have a working class candidate who was him or herself a blue collar worker for a good chunk of their adult life. Most people won't have that anywhere on the ballot.
We are talking about social class and politics and how the social class of a politician or a member of Congress affects how they vote. And it does, according to our guest. And we're wondering what you think, what questions you have, whether you think more ought to be done to encourage more working class people to run for office. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest found out that if a lawmaker is a former finance officer or a former farmer, that has a huge impact on his or her voting record. And we're wondering what you think about all this. In our weather forecast for today, partly cloudy, cool, scattered showers in the north with highs today between 53 and 63 degrees. There's a chance of rain tonight, mainly in northern and western Wisconsin. High temperatures upper 30s to low 40s. And tomorrow, turning partly cloudy, there is a chance of rain statewide. Highs tomorrow in the 50s and low 60s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 7 o'clock, we'll talk with a professor of political science, law, and journalism from UW-Madison. Donald Downs joins us after 7 to talk about the new protest rules at the state capitol and whether or not it's constitutional or not to require protesters to have permits to even carry signs in the state capitol. We'll talk about that for the first half of our next hour, but then after 7:30, we will welcome in the new police chief for the Wisconsin Capitol Police Force, which has been cracking down on protesters without permits in recent weeks. So we will welcome your questions for the chief of the Capitol Police, David Irwin, coming up after 7:30. Right now, we are talking about social class and politics with a guest who has researched how politicians made their money, their occupational backgrounds, how that directly affects their voting record and our economic policy. In general, those from working class roots vote for more pro-worker legislation, and those who are in finance or banking or more white-collar jobs vote for more pro-business legislation. We're talking about why this is and why there are so few people of working class backgrounds in Congress, and welcoming your thoughts, your questions, maybe your fixes. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Nick Carnes, an assistant professor of public policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. One listener wrote in and wants to know, would term limits help there be more of a mix, Professor Carnes?
You know, I've never actually researched exactly that question, so I can't necessarily speak to whether term limits would make a difference on the margin. My sense is that, you know, term limits wouldn't close the gap completely, though. You know, there are states that term limit out politicians, and in those states, there still aren't many lawmakers from the working class. I'm not sure on the margin what kind of an effect it might have. But the gap is just so big. I mean, working class people make up more than half of the country and make up about, say, 2% of Congress or 3-4% of the state legislature. So term limits might be a step in the right direction, but we're talking about an enormous gap.
Let's bring in Chris from De Pere next. Hello, Chris.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate the guest comments on Joe Biden and working class, and it got me thinking about marketing. Conservative corporate leaders are masters and geniuses of marketing, and how are they able to influence the working class so easily, and how do we tell that apart? I'd just kind of get your guest perspective and ideas on that, or thoughts on that. Thank you.
I guess, do you have a reaction to that, Professor Carnes, that the corporate class, he called it, are masters at marketing?
I think there's definitely something to that idea that, someone with experience in the corporate world is going to have a real leg up when it comes to framing and brand image and those sorts of things. And those are important skills to have in the political process. I'm not sort of the school of thought that buys into the sort of what's the matter with Kansas argument, not just because I was born and grew up in Kansas, but because the data really don't support this idea that working class people have been sort of tricked into voting for Republicans. Working class people still vote more Democratic than, say, white collar professionals. They still have more progressive economic views than white collar professionals. And so, my sense is that it really has a lot to do with what happens before the voters get to weigh in. There are lots of processes at work long before election day that are keeping working class people out of office. And so, being a master of marketing is going to give you a leg up when it comes time to campaign, no doubt. But there are things that are working against blue-collar Americans long before the campaigns ever start. And I think figuring out exactly what those factors are and figuring out what, if anything, can be done about them should be a high priority.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about money and the fact that you can't hold your blue-collar nine to five job or shift job if you're in Congress necessarily. Are there other factors that we haven't discussed that might be holding back working-class people?
I mean, there are just so many possibilities, and as I said, the research on this side of things is still still very new, still very preliminary. But I mean, you can imagine someone pointing to differences in, say, political opportunities. So working class people might be less likely to know that state legislator and get that internship that sort of gets them the foot in the door. Working class, there are just heaps of possibilities at this point. The real question is which ones are most important. And like I said, the research on that is new, but it's moving at a fast pace. And in a few years, we might be able to say with more certainty, it's these two or three factors that are really obstacles for working class Americans in the political process. Here's what we can do about it.
Here is Lisa from Richland County. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Professor. On that same line of money, how realistic do you think it is that we'll ever see a blue-collar candidate, given that these campaigns, and particularly the presidential campaigns, require such a ridiculous amount of money to get you from point A to point B?
So do you think we will ever see a blue-collar president or blue-collar president candidate?
History doesn't give us a lot of cause for optimism on this point, but I don't think it's out of the question. I think there are plenty of politically savvy working class Americans out there. Is money important? Absolutely. But I think, like I said, I hope that in my lifetime I see a serious candidate for the White House who's from the working class. And there are signs for hope. The AFL-CIO candidate training program in New Jersey I mentioned a minute ago has been a runaway success. And this is a problem that people really have only just started to talk about. And so I'm not ready to throw in the towel on this one yet.
Is New Jersey the only state that you know of that has such a school?
New Jersey is the only state that I know of that has a standing candidate school that operates year after year. But there have been other places where labor organizations, working class interest groups have used sort of a similar model. Last year in New Haven, Connecticut, the union Unite Here recruited, trained, and elected, I think, about a dozen working class people, working class citizens, to the city council of New Haven. using a model that was very similar to the New Jersey AFL-CIO model. But yeah, for the most part, these are very isolated programs right now. Would they work in other places? You know, that's an open question.
Mm-hmm. We're going to move on to Kay in Muscadet. Hello, Kay.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of points. You know, sometimes you can actually get representatives from either party to take positions that are in the interest of working people. And I think that Bernie Sanders is an example. I actually don't know his background, but I do know that he's taken some very progressive positions that have been in the interest of the majority of the working population. The other thing is that Dale Schultz, a Republican, actually, you know, stood by the unions after going to listening sessions where he heard from nurses and teachers and pipefitters and electricians about how the legislation of Governor Walker was going to impact people negatively. So it doesn't mean that working people can't have influence. I think that eventually, with the economy the way it is, I think that, you know, workers will break from the Democrats and the Republicans and form their own labor party, and that will have a tremendous influence.
Mm-hmm. What about that, Professor Kearns?
I'm definitely with Kay on this first point, that absolutely, there are politicians who care deeply about the working class, Republicans and Democrats, white-collar professionals and blue-collar workers alike. There are lawmakers who care about the well-being of blue-collar workers. My point isn't that if your representative is a white-collar professional, that person's bad or that they don't care about the working class. That's not what I'm saying. But what is true is if you look, you know, across many politicians, the typical member of Congress or the typical state legislator from the working class is more reliably pro-worker. If you want someone who won't bend on economic issues, who won't sell out economically disadvantaged Americans, look for someone who was a blue-collar worker. Look for someone who was economically disadvantaged, him or herself.
Our next caller is David in Milwaukee. Hello, David.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
My question for the guest would be, I guess we just had two callers. One talked about, you know, is there a likelihood of a blue-collar candidate, you know, somehow becoming a president or getting into politics in some shape, form, or another, I guess. And he said, you know, that might happen. And there was another caller who talked about, the one just now who talked about...
Right, David. And because we're so short on time, what would you like to say about that?
Oh, okay. I guess just my question would be, I guess, are the economic issues that our country is facing, you know, in the 2000s and stuff, as far as college degrees being so important now to, you know, being able to get decent jobs and stuff like that, will there ever be a time where we have a politician who's really able to tackle these economic issues and make things easier for the working class? And that's my question.
All right.
Yeah, David, absolutely. I think, you know, these are exceptional times. These are incredibly trying economic circumstances. But we've always had at least a few politicians from the working class. And I think the more time and energy people invest in this issue, there are big returns on programs that help working class people get elected. So I'm still optimistic that the working class has a real fighting chance to become a real presence, to have a real seat at the table in our political institutions.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Joy.
Nick Kearns, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. We have attached an article to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, which highlights a lot of his research, Social Status and How the Elected Vote, from the New York Times. That's on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Amanda Magnus, who produced this hour. Thanks to Rob Ferret for on-air production. And thank you for listening and calling in. Hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.